KBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The Supreme Court is allowing the Trump administration to move ahead with its plans to dismantle the U.S. Department of Education with the three liberal justices in dissent. The court paused an order from a judge who had reversed the layoffs and questioned the broader plan. ABC's Arthur Jones II.
Secretary McMahon wants to return education back to the states. This is just the first step in doing that. By reducing the agency and the workforce, it gives more power to the states and it gives less power to the government.
President Trump threatening tariffs against Russia if a ceasefire with Ukraine isn't worked out within the next 50 days. He has also announced an agreement so that the U.S. can send weapons to Ukraine through NATO, which will be footing the bill, the White House says. The CEO of NVIDIA writing on X that the government has approved the company to start shipping its powerful chips used for AI computing now to China. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Do I recommend Superman? Sort of. As a video, it rocks. But as a movie, I guess it's still just okay. First, the good. James Gunn keeps the action and story moving along nicely. The film relies on what we already know about Superman, his adoptive parents in Kansas, and Lex Luthor, who in this installment resembles a certain billionaire. The filmmakers choose to go right to the bells and whistles, i.e. action, music, and some stunning effects. They even introduce a character that looks like it stumbled into the wrong movie from Jurassic World. There were a few other tangential issues I had, including a couple Daily Planet reporters who didn't even need to be in the film. And with a total of about five lines, actor Wendell Pierce as Perry White had absolutely nothing to do in the film. But Pierce is a great actor and deserves the residual checks coming his way. The main players, David Cornsweet and Rachel Brosnahan, are great as Superman and Lois. Having said that, there is definitely enough cinematic energy in this movie to make the theater-going experience more fun than watching it at home. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The All-Star Game tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, baseball, the Midsummer Classic. The All-Star Game in Atlanta. The Brewers rookie pitcher, Jacob Mizorowski, is there. Likely get to pitch in the sixth or seventh inning. That's according to National League manager Dave Roberts. Now, some teams have complained the Miz doesn't belong in the All-Star Game after just five career starts. What did his teammates say?
They were all thrilled about it, and they're happy for me. Yeah, no, it's been the world for the guys to be around me and support me how they have. It's been awesome.
Basketball. Doc Rivers says ignore the reports on ESPN. Rivers says he met with Giannis Antetokounmpo right after the season ended against the Pacers.
Giannis came in to me the day after the season. We're talking about next season already. You know, there's far more talk outside of Milwaukee than there is inside of Milwaukee. Giannis loves Milwaukee. We love Giannis, and it's been a great relationship.
That's Bucks head coach Doc Rivers. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The Midwest Farm Report is brought to you by Brickstead Dairy Farms, a five-generation family-owned and operated dairy in Greenleaf. Local, healthy, affordable beef raised with care and sustainability. Brickstead Dairy Farms. Smart dairy. Healthy planet. BricksteadDairy.com.
Being blind doesn't look how others may think.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
I know where to find support.
Learn more at fightingblindness.org. A public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll be on our first leg of our tour with Jane and Greg at their home at Radio City Park in Racine, along with Zommers and Kringle. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be hot and humid today. Our high right around 91. That heat index is going to be in the upper 90s by later this afternoon. A few thunderstorms tonight. Our low 69 tomorrow. Partly cloudy, scattered thunderstorms with a high of 81 with more rain and thunderstorms tomorrow night. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently it's 69.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Folks just deserve a little bit better than the usual promises that they're getting. But our members of Congress, two of them from here in Wisconsin, recently signed a letter to Canada and said, Canada, you're on fire. You need to do something about this, which is really not necessarily the best course of action when your neighbor's house is burning down is to send a letter complaining about the smoke.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Maggie Dawn.
At the top of the show, I'll be joined by former U.S. attorney and host of Amicus, Jim Santel. We'll discuss the big takeaways of the last term of the Supreme Court.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Well, the good news is a pretty calm start to a Tuesday morning. Welcome to it. I'm the fabulous Farm Bay Pam Yonke. This is the Midwest Farm Report. Weather, a big part of what we exchange and discuss here on the show. Stu Muckake, meteorologist, along with us in about 15 minutes. Today looks like it's going to be another manageable day. A little warmer than it was yesterday. Sunshine and 87, what we're expecting today. A little bit more of a breeze out of the south, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, partly cloudy down to 69, and then everything starts changing on Wednesday. Showers and thunderstorms are possible beginning Wednesday afternoon. During the rest of the day, we should see sun. Highs tomorrow right around 86, but 70% chance that rain or a thunderstorm is going to start rolling in by about 1 o'clock on Wednesday, and we're looking at between a quarter and a half an inch, at least according to this forecast. We'll see what Stu has to say about that. Rain in the forecast all day Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday evening into Thursday morning, and then we start clearing off. Should see temperatures moderate quite a little bit. Thursday's high around 71, Friday around 77 degrees. Like I said, Stu will break it down for us further as we roll along. That weather is not the biggest item that's influencing the markets these days. It's about the tariffs. We'll talk to John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, on what the strategy is in the marketplace to maneuver around these announcements that sometimes do not turn into reality. See how it's impacting agriculture this morning. And are you looking for a new furry friend that's got four legs? Well, I'll tell you what, the Bureau of Land Management looking for good homes and people that want to adopt wild horses and burros. Cedarburg, Wisconsin, one area of the United States where you'll be able to collect those animals if you so choose. Stephanie Hoff's got that story for us as well on a Tuesday. Critical crop development happening around Wisconsin, and Helena Agri is there to help. Dean Ebert is a product manager in West Bend, and he says right now, pay attention to that alfalfa field.
Well, right now, your new seeding, they get you, most guys got their peas and oats or whatever cover crop harvest put off. We've got regrowth out there. So now's the time to be really watching for weeds, annual weeds that can be cleaned up with herbicides as well as grass pressure. Oh, that can be cleaned up right now. And, of course, potato leafhoppers. I know there are some adult leafhoppers out there right now. I don't think their numbers are exploding. But the cost of, you know, $2 to $3 an acre, you can recoup your investment and really ensure that that new seeding is stress-free to keep building its top and pushing a root to really get established and hold itself together going through winter.
Some advice from Dean Ebert, product manager at the West Bend location for Helena Agri. Find a location near you, HelenaAgri.com.
This year has seen an increase in storms, but not all of these storms are on the earth. From the southern end of the world's longest barn, I'm Ben Jarbo, and geomagnetic storms have been running rampant in space and affecting some of our everyday lives. Sean Dahl, the service coordinator at the Space Weather Prediction Center, shares a deeper dive into what these storms actually are and some of the effects that they have on our technology here on Earth. He also shares some insight on the work they are doing to lessen the losses to agriculture from these storms that are out of this world.
Geomagnetic storms are results from the sun interacting with Earth's magnetic barrier. And this usually happens when we have certain types of activity on the sun, such as a coronal mass ejection, or CME for short. These are explosive releases of solar material, billions of tons of it, in fact, that contains charged particles, and more importantly, a very strong magnetic field that gets dragged along with it out into space. And when that reaches here at Earth, that's when the interactions can happen that disturb our magnetic environment to the point that we can get geomagnetic storms.
Do they create anything that we will visibly be able to notice?
Yes, geomagnetic storms will be responsible for the northern lights or the aurora that we see here in the northern hemisphere. And that's a result of these charged particles entering through the polar regions, and they start to interact with Earth's own molecules up high in the outer layers of the atmosphere. And when those interactions settle down, light is released. And this is an ongoing process when we have geomagnetic storms. We measure them with a whole bunch of things called magnetometers, these observational instruments which measure deviations in Earth's magnetic field. That's how we measure the intensity of these storms and put it all together. And this often relates to how far equatorward the aurora might be seen.
And this year, it seems like a lot of times we've been hearing that you'll be able to see the northern lights, especially here in Wisconsin. How come these storms have been so frequent and so strong this year?
We are in solar maximum. Solar maximum is roughly an 11-year on average cycle where the sun goes from a period of minimal activity to maximum activity and then back down to minimum activity. We are in solar maximum of solar cycle number 25, and therefore we're having more occasions of things such as CMEs and another feature called coronal holes, which interact with Earth's magnetic environment and cause the aurora to be seen. And it's not all just about the aurora, I'm sure we're going to talk about. The impacts of the technology that we rely upon when these storms happen can be quite significant.
Now that we are moving forward here to some of this technology, the impact it has, what are some things that we could see because of these geomagnetic storms?
The impacts are wide-ranging. They affect satellites in space that are trying to maintain their orbit because when a geomagnetic storm happens, the Earth's outer atmospheres expand and they become more dense, and satellites will slow down because they're going through that more dense atmosphere. And if it's not corrected, they will lose the war to gravity and they'll burn up in the atmosphere. Storms we had last year, two of them, in fact, had the largest satellite migrations in history happen as a result, because 5,000 or more satellites were burning fuel trying to maintain their orbit. They have aviation industry across the oceans. They will deviate flights further southward because these storms can affect some of the communications that they use to talk to air traffic control. The power grid becomes enormously concerned with these levels of activity because electricity and magnetism are tied together. So when you have these geomagnetic storms happen, this causes currents of energy to build up on high voltage transmission lines, which can overheat transformers if it's not corrected or accounted for. And as some of this conversation is talking about today, GPS. GPS accuracy can go out the window with some of the most extreme storms and in some cases be completely unusable, such as one of the storms last year in May proved quite prolific for the farming industry.
Yeah, and in this farming industry, especially right now as we are in the growing season, people are getting their fields sprayed, and a lot of those companies do depend on GPS to be able to run their equipment and autonomy. How have you seen that impact the ag community?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we learn more and more about how impactful space weather can be as technologies change. You know, we don't always have and know what people are using today. So something I learned last year is how farmers, local farmers to, you know, giant business farmers, are using precision GPS so much more and relying upon it so much more as part of their work. You know, to have that level of accuracy so spray isn't lost at all. It's only going on crops, or seeds are not going into the ditch. They're only going into the areas that are made ready for them. Storms last year, the one in May in particular, it became apparent to me pretty quickly that the storm was much so impacting the farming industry in early May trying to plant seeds, such as my brother-in-law in North Dakota. I got contacted on the night that the storms began saying, hey, what is going on? My GPS and my tractor is not working. I had to shut it off. And I got some more details and come to find out what was supposed to be accurate within less than an inch was off by over 12 feet. Was trying to take them in remarkable turns. So that was my first storm report about the farmers being impacted. In this case, it was in North Dakota, but come to find out, many states had that problem. And even some of the companies had to release a statement about space weather impacting those precision GPS guided equipment.
Since then, has there been any work done to try to mitigate what could happen with these geomagnetic storms in agriculture, or just overall something to help maybe lessen the, I guess, magnetic pole it has?
Yeah, you know, there's nothing we can do about how these storms interact with Earth. But what we can do, and what we do here at the Space Weather Prediction Center, is we put out messaging and information beyond the normal warnings and alerts that we put out when activity becomes significant, just as we did much last year with storms in May and October. And again, here that started off the month of June with a G4 near the top end of our scale storm that we had. What I've been trying to do is work with broadcast meteorologists. In fact, right now, today, I'll be speaking with broadcast meteorologists at their conference in Idaho about space weather and about how they can communicate, because the National Weather Service, which we fall under, has a very key and core partnership with the broadcast meteorologists. Why is this? It's because the National Weather Service issues all the warnings and advisories and watches about severe terrestrial weather. And the broadcast meteorologists in their local communities do a great job of conveying all that information when terrestrial weather becomes significant or potentially dangerous, right? I want the same thing to happen with space weather. I want the broadcast meteorologists to be able to get on the air and say, hey, look, it's planting season, it's harvest season, your GPS equipment may not work properly because the National Weather Service is expecting a geomagnetic storm at the 4 to 5 level, and this could impact your precision GPS equipment on your systems. That alone would be remarkable, right? Because that would save fuel, that would save stress, that would save trying to troubleshoot and work a problem when maybe there wasn't really a problem because it was something to do with space weather. These are the things that we can do and that we're trying to do to make farmers and other of the general public aware about space weather and how that can impact them.
Yeah, I mean, when we look at agriculture advancing in technology, now a big thing has been these autonomous machines and drones. How have these geomagnetic storms, or how could they impact the use of this equipment?
Yeah, anything to do with precision GPS can certainly be impacted. We've talked about farmers. Aviation uses these systems across the country, or even worldwide for that matter, but they have redundant systems. So if GPS accuracy isn't living up to standards, they have other methods, you know, radar control, for instance, about get precision location. But it's still quite impactful. That storm in May affected the ability for the airlines to use GPS for over 15 hours at all. So they were using their redundant systems. Drone operations, as you brought up, yeah, much more so today. Deliveries are being made by drone anymore. People, emergency managers and responders using drones to search and rescue and find out what areas are looking like, what's damage. Drones are impacted by these storms. They can be impacted in one of two ways. GPS, if they're being navigated by GPS or locations to see exactly where they're at, and then communication, because these storms and other types of space weather could impact the communication. If you lose communication with a drone for even some seconds, that could make the drone come down. So being aware about space weather for these other enterprises as they come up, these new technologies, is also very, very important.
If it gets to the point where you are able to tell people beforehand, that could, like you're saying, save a lot of time and money for farmers and people that are within that whole industry, especially with the drones, because a lot now they're using them to spray and even plant in some cases. But is there any other information that you would like to share about your work with these geomagnetic storms related to agriculture or other industries that are similar?
Yeah, sure. So we here at SWPSC, I'll say SWPSC, it's short for Space Weather Prediction Center, SWPC. We issue forecasts every day. We are a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week operation in our forecast office. So we always have the forecast office staff because there are standard products that go out at specific times. And there are warnings, watches, and alerts that we have to issue as activity picks up.
Dahl also says that some recent geomagnetic storms caused a $500 million loss in the corn industry alone. To help mitigate this, they are working on that prediction of these storms, and they want to work with broadcasters to let people know before they happen. From the southern end of the world's longest barn, I'm Ben Jarbo.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as ag meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matt Nair on air.
Time for the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. The Wisconsin Supreme Court hands a big win to the environment. The court ruled it's unconstitutional for a legislative committee to block rules created by state agencies. The decision means good environmental rules now face an easier path to getting to the finish line and becoming law. For years, legislative vetoes by a handful of legislators stymied a long list of environmental protections. After more than 30 years, the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program is going unfunded. Money for the legacy program was stripped out of the budget by the Joint Committee on Finance. The program helps preserve our state's wildlife areas and fisheries through land purchases and grants. Now that the budget has been signed, it's unclear how the vital program will continue, although there is talk of a standalone bill that would revive it. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Amanda, and we all know that Northeast Wisconsin has some of the best events around, but trying to find them all can be tricky. So here at WGBW, we decided to do the work for you. Prevent boredom on any night by going to WGBW.fm and click events in the top right corner. You'll never have to spend forever scrolling to find out what's going on in your area. And if you got an event to share, hit us up by emailing info@WGBW.fm. We can work together to have real news and great conversation while giving you the 411 on what's happening in New Wisco.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Milwaukee film critic Mr. Matt Miller. I know you saw this. I saw 28 Years Later as well. I really liked it. My wife loved it, and we're not really horror people, but just something that grabbed. It's just great storytelling.
It is simultaneously what you would want from a zombie movie and something completely different. It's just a really fascinating movie and one I hope people keep checking out.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. Jay Matt Nair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Wisconsin is going to be doing things to welcome more movie making here. Nathan Deming joins us. Don't miss it.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. From Hobart to Bay Settlement, 97.9 WGBW.
Northwest, I'm talking far northwest, not officially Park Falls, but Hayward and areas north up to the Lake Superior shore. They have a flood watch in effect from 1 this afternoon through Wednesday morning. There's a pretty stationary front hanging up there and could very well cause some heavy rainfall amounts up to 1, 2, maybe 3 inches. That's the far northwest part of Wisconsin. You know, I'd call that the area running toward Lake Superior. And that's where things could get pretty dicey as far as that rain is concerned. And that's already this afternoon into the nighttime. That frontal boundary extending from Lake Superior to North Dakota, and the radar indicating that whole northeast point, that arrowhead of Minnesota and far north central Minnesota, getting quite a bit of rain already this morning, as they are in the northern end of the UP of Michigan. Now, that front will drop south today and start bringing that rain toward northwest and even western and central Wisconsin and push it further east and southeast later today and into the nighttime. We'll be talking about some rain, certainly through Wednesday. I don't think it'll be quite that heavy, but there'll be rain around. I'll check forecast details after this.
Rural Mutual Insurance is proud to sponsor the event tent at Wisconsin Farm Technology Days, August 5th through the 7th at Clinton Farms in Bear Creek. For nearly a century, Rural Mutual has protected Wisconsin farms and supported rural communities with local insurance agents in every county. Join them at the Rural Mutual Event Center for live music, vendor booths, barbecue demos, and more. They're proud to protect what matters most. Your farm, your family, your future. Learn more at ruralmutual.com.
Na, 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 na. Hey, Wisconsin, are you feeling summer? Then it's time to feel cheesy. It's time to feel good. July 31st through August 10th, only at the Wisconsin State Fair. Presented by U.S. Cellular.
The only competition that really matters is you versus you. And with the performance of Veltima fungicide from BASF, you can take your best results even further. Veltima fungicide is on your side to out-yield the competition by an average of 7 bushels per acre, but you've never been average. Beat your own record, get every bushel you deserve, and make this your best season yet with Veltima fungicide from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
All right, let's have that forecast, too.
All right. Well, we'll expect that rain to start pushing into Wisconsin, the far northwest, already later today into the nighttime, pushing further east and southeast through tonight and on into the day Wednesday. In a good part of Wisconsin, I'd say some 0.5 to 1 inch amounts of rain could be heavier further north, and it will be a little lighter the further you head off to the south. Very warm today. There will be 90s, and heat index is pushing up around 90 or so in the state, upper 80s elsewhere, a fair amount of sun yet today in most of the state. And tonight, then, that rain starts pushing a bit further south. In the south, we stay clear. It doesn't cool much. Upper 60s and low 70s, excuse me. Tomorrow's the day with some rainfall that should end into
97.9 WGBW and WGBW.FM.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on Civic Media Radio. We now take you to Matt Nair on Air with Wisconsin Farmers Union President Darren Von Rudin on the importance of public radio.
What I wanted to bring up really quick is one of the things you brought up as a discussion point was cuts to public radio and NPR. Darren, do you want to speak on that?
Yeah, you know, it's something that I think affects not only farmers, but rural citizens across the country. You know, I hear more and more people that are listening to the programs that public radio offers and national public radio or TV. You know, how do we keep those programs alive? And a lot of that is through public funding. About half of the funding, or a quarter of the funding, to NPR and public radio comes from private donations. So, you know, it's one of those programs that I listen to a lot when I'm driving down the road with all the windshield time that I have. and it has a lot to do with the news source that's there too. It's an independent news source. It's not viable to one particular promoter. You know, at the end of different newscasts, they'll say that one of their sponsors was actually somebody that they were talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
What radio stations do you hear that on? You just don't. And so how do you know who's pushing what button that they can report on and what they can't report on, where public radio and public TV, you know, really gets to the source. And most times if the opposite sides want to be on the stage at the same time, that's what they would much rather do. But we're seeing a lot of pushback from the far right saying that it's not a good news source. Well, if you don't show up and talk about your point, you really can't say that. It's like the local tavern affiliate or customer that complains about politics all the time, but never goes and votes.
Right. Yes.
You really don't have a right to complain about it if you're not willing to be on the program.
I'm very, very surprised that you and other agriculture producers in Wisconsin are NPR fans. And I think that helps explain a little bit to me, at least, why they would like to cut funding, because I think they would much prefer that Wisconsin farmers were listening to different kinds of media outlets.
Yeah, and you know, and certainly nowadays with modern technology, and if you are lucky enough to own some of the modern equipment, you can get Sirius Radio and listen to whatever you want. But there's a whole lot of us that are still farming with tractors from the 80s and 90s and still have AM radios on our dials too yet. So having as many news sources as we can is what we prefer.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
From Denmark to De Pere, this is 97.9 WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The Supreme Court is allowing the Trump administration to move ahead with its plans to dismantle the U.S. Department of Education with the three liberal justices in dissent. The court paused an order from a judge who had reversed the layoffs and questioned the broader plan. ABC's Arthur Jones II.
Secretary McMahon wants to return education back to the states. This is just the first step in doing that. By reducing the agency and the workforce, it gives more power to the states and it gives less power to the government.
President Trump threatening tariffs against Russia if a ceasefire with Ukraine isn't worked out within the next 50 days. He has also announced an agreement so that the U.S. can send weapons to Ukraine through NATO, which will be footing the bill, the White House says. The CEO of NVIDIA writing on X that the government has approved the company to start shipping its powerful chips used for AI computing now to China. This is ABC News.
The All-Star Game tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, baseball, the Midsummer Classic, the All-Star Game in Atlanta. The Brewers rookie pitcher Jacob Mizorowski is there, likely get to pitch in the sixth or seventh inning. That's according to National League manager Dave Roberts. Now, some teams have complained the Miz doesn't belong in the All-Star Game after just five career starts. What did his teammates say?
They were all thrilled about it, and they're happy for me. Yeah, no, it's been the world for the guys to be around me and support me how they have. It's been awesome.
Basketball. Doc Rivers says ignore the reports on ESPN. Rivers says he met with Giannis Antetokounmpo right after the season ended against the Pacers.
Giannis came in to me the day after the season. We're talking about next season already. You know, there's far more talk outside of Milwaukee than there is inside of Milwaukee. Giannis loves Milwaukee. We love Giannis, and it's been a great relationship.
That's Bucks head coach Doc Rivers. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome comedian and host of the 40-Year-Old Boy podcast, Mike Schmidt. Then local rock duo, 7,000 Apart, joins me to rock the studio. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be hot and humid today. Our high right around 91. That heat index is going to be in the upper 90s by later this afternoon. A few thunderstorms tonight. Our low 69 tomorrow. Partly cloudy, scattered thunderstorms with a high of 81 with more rain and thunderstorms tomorrow night. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently it's 69.
Mommy, can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. The Big Beautiful Bill is basically an all-out assault on working Americans.
No tax on tips. It's not as good as it sounds because a lot of tipped workers are not paying that higher level of taxes right in the first place.
As the wealthiest among us dine at the feast of all feasts, don't be fooled by the table scraps.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here at Civic Media, we believe radio plays an important role in strengthening our communities by focusing on what is happening here and now. Our broadcast lineup strives to bring you real news and great conversation throughout your day. We now bring you a portion of a recent episode of The Maggie Dawn Show, where Maggie sat down with economist Benga Agyilor, talking about what the impacts will be to rural health care with the current budget bill working its way through Washington.
Tell us what's at stake, what's currently baked into the budget reconciliation bill that will directly impact our rural communities and the health care that they can access when it comes to this $880 million in Medicaid cuts that's slated to occur.
What's happening with Medicaid, and the reason why this is such a big deal, is that they're cutting, you know, as you said, it's a massive amount, probably the biggest cut that we've seen in over 40 years, $880 billion. But the way that they're doing the cut is by adding work requirements and other administrative burdens to basically kick people off of Medicaid. If you're not, you know, if you don't have health insurance, then you're not, quote unquote, you know, spending money on health, then that's going to, you know, cause the quote unquote savings. And so the issue here is that insurance is important to help out with the hospitals. As the impact of these rural hospitals, that their financial viability, a lot of time is based on Medicaid. And so I'll just throw out a few stats. So first of all, nearly half of all births in rural areas are financed by Medicaid. 47% of children are covered by Medicaid. And, you know, one of the reasons why is that when people are using healthcare and they don't have insurance, the hospital still has to take care of them because that's what they do. And so you have all these uncompensated care costs. And just as a comparison, in states that expanded Medicaid, 3% of uncompensated care costs are for hospitals in states that expanded Medicaid. In states that did not expand Medicaid, it's over 7%. And so you see that now with this cutting the $880 billion and, you know, up to upwards of almost 14 million people becoming uninsured, that's going to have dire impacts for rural hospitals.
So if a woman is having a baby What is particularly risky about this scale of cuts to Medicaid is that as we move forward, if these cuts are adopted, it will be less likely that that woman will enter a hospital during childbirth with Medicaid. And if she doesn't have Medicaid and doesn't otherwise have health insurance, the hospital, of course, still has to care for her.
You've been listening to a portion of a recent episode of The Maggie Dawn Show, which airs across the Civic Media Radio Network weekdays from 4 to 6 p.m. Find the full broadcast lineup at civicmedia.us/shows.
This is the talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Yeah, well, I'll definitely be keeping tabs on it all.
I'm always keeping an eye on the screen when I'm in the office in the morning because you never know what story's developing that might drive the trade. We're going to catch up with John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend this morning. Find out just exactly how the market is reading this latest round of threats for tariffs, specifically to some of our biggest agriculture trading partners, Canada and Mexico. We'll find out what John has to say about that. Really, I don't see any issues in our crop production side of things. The latest update state by state on how corn and soybeans and the wheat harvest is coming along. We'll also take a deeper dive on that. Welcome back, everybody. So glad you're with us. I am the fabulous farm babe, Pam Yonke. This is the Midwest Farm Report on this, the 15th day of July. Let's see, what can I tell you? On this day, 1799, the Rosetta Stone is found. You know, if you hear Rosetta Stone, you probably think the language arts class. But this literally was an ancient Egyptian rock inscribed with a decree from King Ptolemy V. They found it in the port city of Rosetta. It was found by a French captain. The Rosetta Stone found on this day, 1799. On this day, 1996, MSNBC, the television news channel, was launched, created by Microsoft and General Electric's NBC unit. The first show on the channel, hosted by Jody Applegate. MSNBC started on this day, 1996. On this day in 1997, Gianni Versace murdered by serial killer Andrew Cunanan. Remember following that story from the Twin Cities all the way down to Miami, Florida. That was on this day back in 1997. On this day, 1980, here in Wisconsin, western Wisconsin experienced a derecho, severe weather storm, covered about a 20-mile-wide swath through St. Croix, Pierce, Dunn, Eau Claire, Chippewa, and Clark counties. There were winds that sped as fast as 100 miles per hour, several tornadoes. It caused in excess of $160 million in damage. That was in 1980 dollars, and it also killed three people. Western Wisconsin derecho on this day back in 1960. Happy birthday to singer-songwriter Linda Ronstadt. She is 79. Supermodel Kim Alexis is 65. And actor Forrest Whitaker turned 64 today. And now you know. Well, are you looking for a new companion around the farm? I'll tell you what, a four-legged bunch is coming towards the state of Wisconsin courtesy of the Bureau of Land Management. It's the annual Wild Horse and Burro Adoption Opportunity, and Stephanie Hoff's got more.
There's a livestock sale coming up, but it's not your typical animals on the auction block. The Bureau of Land Management within the U.S. Department of the Interior is hosting its online corral auction featuring wild horses and wild donkeys. The sale is the week of July 14th. Winning bidders can pick up their animal or adopt an animal at the Ozaukee County Fairgrounds in September. Jason Lutterman joins us from the National Wild Horse and Burro Program. Jason, why does the Bureau of Land Management have this wild horse and burro auction and adoption program?
The Bureau of Land Management is responsible for managing and protecting wild horses and burros on BLM Western public land. So these are mostly in 10 Western states. And our responsibility is to just allow the horses to be horses out on public lands. The main thing that we pay attention to is to make sure they have enough food and water. And because these herds, these horses and burros, they thrive so well on public lands that their populations actually double every 4 to 5 years. And so what our adoption program does is it helps us find homes for those animals that are that might run out of food or water on the range. And so this is a really important part of our program to help us keep the animals healthy and the land healthy.
Now, we're going to be talking about auction and adoption in this interview. Are those, are these the same things, or are these separate?
So, yeah, we offer horses and burros for adoption and sale on the online corral. And those are two different ways you can bring home a wild horse or burro. Most of our animals are available for adoption. And those older animals, or those animals that we've offered for adoption multiple times, can be sold. And there's different parameters for each of those programs. What makes them sale eligible, which is a different program, the animal has to be over 10 years of age or have been offered for adoption at least 3 times. And what happens with the sale program is that you get ownership of your animal right away upon signing the bill of sale. Whereas if you adopt an animal, there is a waiting period of up to 1 year before you actually get title. You get to bring home your animal right away, but the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, holds on to your title for up to a year, and we conduct a compliance check to make sure the animal is getting good care and went to a good home.
One of the pickup locations is in Cedarburg, Wisconsin, so it's pretty convenient.
Yeah, so we try to make it as convenient as possible for folks to bring home a wild horse or burro through the online corral. And so while the auction is running from July 14th to the 21st, you have the option when you win your animal to select a pickup location. And that's because we want to make it as easy as possible for you. We don't want to make people in the East Coast have to drive all the way to the West Coast to one of our facilities to bring home their animal. And so we are already hosting an adoption event in Cedarburg, September 12th through the 13th. And so this pickup option is just so you can pick up your animal from that event instead of having to drive all the way across the country.
So who wants these wild animals typically?
So typically, a lot of people use wild horses for a wide variety of uses. A lot of people trail ride with them. They are very hardy animals. They're very sure-footed. And so they make great companions for the trails. A lot of people use them for ranch work. They are really trainable for a variety of disciplines because you're getting a horse that doesn't have any bad habits already. They don't have any previous training. They're really a blank slate for you to train the horse for whatever you might need a horse to do.
What about the burro side?
So a lot of people use them as guard animals. Burros make great guard animals. They'll run off coyotes or other predators that might threaten your herd. A lot of people just keep them as pets. I mean, you take one look at one of those burros and you'll see why. They're very cute animals, and a lot of people have them around as pets or livestock guardians. Some people take them on the trails as well. They can be used as pack animals. Basically anything you want a donkey to do, that's what this burro is for.
Jason Lutterman, along with us from the National Wild Horse and Burro Program. Next week's auction is your chance to provide a good home to a wild horse or donkey. This program makes sure that animals and rangeland out west are healthy and not overcrowded. We've got the links to see the online auction and get adoption information. Just visit MidwestFarmReport.com. The auction is the week of July 14th. The pickup location and adoption event is September 12th and 13th at the Ozaukee County Fairgrounds in Cedarburg. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff. Blueberries are in season, and in the town of Troy in St. Croix County, people have been flocking to Blue Ridge Growers to get their fill of these powerhouse berries. Jill Berkey has been hosting U-Picks on the farm for decades, and she says in that time, demand has only grown as more families look for fun on the farm.
Consumers are extremely excited about coming out and enjoying some outdoor activity that is not only healthy, but also provides an education about agriculture. And I highly encourage anyone to find those farms and growers that are out there in our part of Wisconsin. You will be absolutely impressed and have a great time.
Find your next ag venture by visiting the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association at wiagtourism.com.
Welcome back. Wisconsin farmers not real disappointed with the quality of the crop they're working with right now. The latest update from the Wisconsin Ag Statistical Service shows 78% of our corn crops rated good to excellent, about 74% of our soybeans rated good to excellent. For some folks in Wisconsin, the small grain harvest has begun for both oats as well as wheat. The wheat rated 72% good to excellent, and the oats 81% good to excellent. Potato harvest has begun in the Central Sands area, and conditions look good. 89% of our potatoes called good to excellent, so not much to complain about. Markets and overnight electronic trade can give you something to grumble about, that's for sure. Dow Jones Industrial Average, as I look at the screens right now, still in the red ink by about 40 points. Our commodities are also suffering this morning. Right now, we've got December new crop corn, that's basically unchanged at 417. November new crop soybeans, unchanged at 1007. The wheat for September is down two at 540. December wheat down a penny at 561. Taking a look at dairy, yesterday the barrel cheese dropped a half a cent to 167. 40-pound block cheese on Monday was down a penny and a half at 164.5, while double A butter lost a penny to 258 a pound. The August class 3 milk that goes into cheese currently down 12 at 1731. September closed 23 cents lower at 1817 a hundredweight. Field days are popping up all around the state of Wisconsin today. The UW-Madison Forage and Cover Crop Field Day starts at 9 a.m. Arlington Ag Research Facility is going to be all day, and it's tailored for farmers, agronomists, crop consultants, researchers, students, and anybody that's wanting to learn more about forages and cover crops. They're going to take a look at everything from what's happening with cereal rye and its impact on alfalfa, weed and insect management, talking about innovations in cover crop breeding, just a lot of real good stuff. If you go that direction, keep your eyes open for a tall, redheaded kid. That'll be our own Ben Jarbo. He's covering that for us today.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Tarrant County, Texas County Commissioners approved a new county redistricting map June 3rd, diluting the votes of Black and Hispanic voters. But commissioners claim the gerrymandering was for political, not racial reasons. The map likely eliminates a majority-minority district and has drawn widespread condemnation and a Voting Rights Act lawsuit. County Commissioners and senior county official Judge Tim O'Hare brought in the Conservative Public Interest Legal Foundation and the National Republican Redistricting Trust to draw the map, according to reporting by Democracy Docket. Their efforts apparently manipulated the districts to gain another GOP county commission seat and a 4-to-1 advantage. Analysis by the UCLA Voting Rights Project and Southern Methodist University found the approved map packed District 2 Black and Hispanic voters into District 1, reducing the chance a Black or Hispanic candidate would be elected in District 2. Because the county staggers election cycles for different districts, it also disenfranchised as many as 150,000 voters, heavily Black and Hispanic, who can't vote in their current district's 2026 election and must wait until 2028. Voters sued under the VRA and the 14th and 15th Amendments. The commissioners claimed that they gerrymandered for political advantage, to which the Supreme Court turns a blind eye, and not racial discrimination. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Matt Nair on air.
Author of America, Let Me In, Felipe Torres Medina is here.
My funny book about immigration. You can see how the current administration and their policies are affecting the communities. But I'm a comedian. It is really sad, but how about some jokes? Because that's the only way I can, you know.
If we don't take a moment to laugh about something, we're all going to self-destruct.
100%.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. From Ashwaubenon to Alloway, this is 97.9 WGBW. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll be on our first leg of our tour with Jane and Greg at their home at Radio City Park in Racine, along with Zommers and Kringle. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
800-334-9779. John just got back from a family trip down towards Kentucky, and I know that if you're involved in agriculture, you can't help yourself. What the crops look like? What kinds of crop observations can John Heinberg make to us this morning?
Yeah, again, we got the old windshield time, like we call it, going through the Indiana area. I didn't get over through into Illinois. So that I-65 corridor, though, northern tier of that's got a lot of good corn production areas in Indiana. And it's not a mixed bag. I mean, I will admit, I mean, I was in southwest corner Wisconsin for the 4th of July weekend, and I thought things looked better there than it did in Indiana, given the way the weather works. And we've seen that area, east-western area of Indiana, on the drier side. So there was one spot I did see around that Fair Oaks area where things were pretty tough, it looked like to me. Corn was definitely dry in terms of lacking some moisture. Was definitely like rolling yesterday on the way home. But again, in the big picture things, those are small areas. As we got those crop ratings last night, 74% good to excellent, still one of the best rated crops ever or in the last decade for this time frame. And you know, that's what the market's still focused on right now. We got a USDA report last week that was fairly friendly for corn, but the market really hasn't responded overall, and that's just because of the prospects that this crop is going to get larger and then those numbers that are out there that the USDA is putting on the table, and the market doesn't believe it right now in their mindset.
Right. John Heimberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, joining us live here on the Midwest Farm Report. 800-334-9779, the phone number, totalfarmmarketing.com, the website. Let's talk a little bit, John, about the other looming news item in the market, and that is the latest round of threats, more tariffs targeted some of our biggest trade partners, Canada and Mexico. I've got to believe the market still got that in the back of its mind.
Very much so, and that's also another thing that just continues to weigh on the grains, especially in the grain side of things when it comes to tariffs on potentially retaliation against from Mexico in that regard. You know, largest corn buyer and is obviously Mexico. They've been very active this last year. They've got their own needs for grain down there due to their poor weather conditions over the last couple of growing seasons, and they've just been stepping up to the plate, buying U.S. corn hand over fist to meet those needs. So obviously any type of retaliatory tariff is what the market's more concerned about in that regard. So we'll have to see how that one plays out. You know, we've kind of gone through this here about a handful of months ago, and now we're around a tariff 2.0 or 3.0 or wherever number we're at this time frame. I think that was something that also was a limiting factor. Now, yesterday the market actually rebounded very nicely, did put a little bit of a turn in. So we'll have to see. But here we are again this morning pushing 3-4 cents lower. Again, just based off those crop ratings and the fear that trade could be a little bit tighter. And the USDA on that report for corn did chop those export numbers for next year, which I think was probably the negative tone it may have put into that marketplace in terms of the market response, that this pile of corn could get bigger than what we're thinking right now.
Now, what about what's going on elsewhere in the world? We haven't talked for a while about South America. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be talking about South America.
Yeah, one of the biggest things that came out, too, is this potential 50% tariff on Brazilian imports. Now, that's going to have a little bit more of an impact in the livestock side of things. Brazil imports of beef into the United States has been really running at a record pace here for the first half of 2025 as maybe the industry was thinking this was coming, and they just stockpiled Brazilian beef into the United States. Now, in the last month, it's dropped quickly, actually 10% under last year for the month of June. So that's kind of an interesting tone. So maybe, like I said, the market had wind that this was coming. Now, where does Brazilian beef typically go? It goes into our ground beef supplies and helps keep those costs down there just with the lower quality of beef that comes out of Brazil. So that's going to be something to kind of watch here as we go forward and terms of what could happen in the consumer and ground beef and things of that nature. If that was something that came into play and lasted for a while, that could really kind of bump up that maybe potential prices on ground beef just because of that lack of supply of U.S. cattle and then maybe limiting or adding cost to those imports.
John Heimberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing, joining us on the Midwest Farm Report. Again, totalfarmmarketing.com, 800-334-9779. Let's talk a little bit more then, John, about where we go from here. Great crop ratings, watching the international marketplace for all kinds of reasons, and kind of, again, like you said, waiting to see if this round of threats sticks. Is it in the marketplace? Is it kind of who blinks first, or how are they approaching this? We've been down this road before.
Yeah, we have. And actually, you can just kind of tell maybe that doesn't have the same stick that it did the first time all these announcements came out, as the market just gets a little bit of tired of it. And, you know, we'll see what happens mentality, you know. So right now, again, the market is still, I think, purely focused in terms of the grain side on the weather. 6-10 day, 8-14 day forecast, staying warm, but still good moisture coming through the grain belt. And that's just the conditions, like, you know, set up for a pretty good crop of corn and soybeans. But obviously, those black swan events could be out there regarding tariffs. You know, if those retaliatory tariffs come into play, you know, we're going to see the market react to them. But right now, it feels like a little bit more of a wait and see mentality, especially on the political side of things. But this market is still just truly focused on weather and production increasing, given the quality of the crop that we're seeing across the nation.
Absolutely. John Heinberg, market advisor, Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, breaking it down for you on the Midwest Farm Report. Again, 800-334-9779, the number you can reach them if you still have questions. We'll take more questions tomorrow morning. See you here.
This. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Maggie Dawn Show.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Agritourism has become a billion-dollar business in the United States. That's ahead on Farm to Fork. The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health Campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community, and while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers. In the last census of agriculture, more than half of U.S. counties had one or more farms engaged in agritourism. In Oregon's Willamette Valley, there are scads of them. Audrey Comerford works with Oregon State University Extension.
I have everything from a tulip farm that opens in April to a small dairy that does single cow cheese and will produce vodka out of whey. We have blueberry folks that will do frozen products throughout the year to be able to lengthen their season. And so we're seeing a lot of ingenuity here with the farms.
Comerford says many types of operations fall under the agritourism umbrella.
Anytime the visiting public is coming onto a farm or ranch, and this could be for things like direct sales, farm stands, U-picks, U-cuts. It could be for entertainment such as festivals, pumpkin patches. It could be for hospitality reasons like tastings or farm-to-table dinners, outdoor recreation, hiking, birding, horseback riding. We also have education, which is classes, demonstrations, those types of things.
How many mothers in frustration over the latest mess have asked, "Were you born in a barn?" I'm pretty sure no one has ever answered that with a yes, but these days you can book events in a barn, even weddings. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Maggie Dawn.
At the top of the show, I'll be joined by former U.S. attorney and host of Amicus, Jim Santel. We'll discuss the big takeaways of the last term of the Supreme Court.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
I'm bored.
Is this your child's complaint? Then register for tickets to Sunset on the Farm. This free event includes a light dinner, wagon tours of the field, and a lot more fun for the family. There's even Culver's custard available for a donation of $1. Bring canned good to help them support the food pantry or a monetary donation to Hands Across the Pier. Put boredom behind on Thursday, July 24th from 3 to 8 p.m. at Brickstead Dairy, 1734 Wayside Road in Greenleaf, Wisconsin.
Mom, let's go Sunset on the Farm.
Okay, let's go.
Hey, it's John Mino.
And Jim Schmidt from Mino and the Mayor.
Want to stay in the loop with all things Northeast Wisconsin? Sign up for the WGBW weekly newsletter.
Get the latest local stories, updates on the weather, and a special feature from our Mino and the Mayor podcast.
It's your one-stop shop for real news and great conversation in Northeast Wisconsin.
Log on to WGBW.FM today and get signed up.
Real news, great conversation. Sign up today at WGBW.FM/newsletter.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The Supreme Court lifting an injunction against the Trump administration's efforts to gut the Department of Education.
Trump celebrating the win, saying, quote, "The federal government has been running our education system into the ground, but we're going to turn it all around by giving the power back to the people." But education advocates warn that the coming cuts will leave students without critical support services, from special education to financial aid.
ABC's Nicole D'Antonio, the court's majority not explaining the decision, but the three liberal justices dissented. NVIDIA has announced it has gotten permission from the Trump administration to begin selling its chips for artificial intelligence to China. The president threatening Russia with what he says will be severe sanctions if a ceasefire with Ukraine isn't reached within 50 days. No details on what the severity of the sanctions will be. Trash pickup has resumed in the city of Philadelphia nearly 2 weeks after 9,000 city workers went on strike. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin.